Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp. Drew Nixon producing the show. Coming up in 45 minutes, Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. And yeah, definitely curious to hear not only on the Hollywood Brown discussion we just had and about the potential practice window opening up, but where things with Pacheco and Minshew. And that's where we start this hour, because we all know that they're both going to be big boosts in some form for this team in their respective areas. But who do you actually think is going to have the bigger impact? I'm curious to get your guys' texts on this as well. 913-586-7965. I think everybody's excited to see Pacheco back very soon. Minshew going back to last year, how impactful he was. But who do you, A, think needs to have the bigger impact, but also who will? Because who needs to have the impact?
Minshew.
I think it's clearly Minshew for a defense that is really struggling to get pressure without blitzing. It's Chris Jones, and that's kind of it right now. So that is true. Who will have the bigger impact? Is that a different answer for you? Because I think on the surface, you would just say, well, Kareem Hunt's been really effective, so how much more effective can Pacheco be? I think that's forgetting still how good Isaiah Pacheco was.
Correct.
For his team, you know? I think the bigger impact, though, I'm still going to say I think Charles Minshew does not only need to have the bigger impact, but will, because I'm expecting Kareem Hunt and Pacheco to split time to some extent, which is what I would hope it actually is. Charles Minshew could end up having a huge snap count once he gets acclimated again come the playoffs.
So needs to, it's Minshew by a mile. I don't know if anyone realizes this, but the Chiefs rank fifth worst in the NFL in team sacks. So you're talking about pressure. And look, some of those pressures are effective pressures. I'm not trying to deny that. They've gotten effective pressures that didn't lead to sack. But fifth worst? Like, you'd actually be surprised to find out the Steelers are the 10th worst in the league in total team sacks this year, shockingly enough. So, like, you can get stuff with pressure, but look at the teams are going to face in the playoffs. Broncos, number one. Ravens, number three. Houston, number five. Chargers, number seven. Like, those are the teams you are likely to see in the AFC. The Bills are in the top 12. They are better, significantly. Some teams have twice as many sacks as the Chiefs. They desperately need a mini to have a bigger factor. I actually think it will be Pacheco, though, because once Pacheco's back in, the dynamic level of the offense upticks a little bit. What has been happening with the Chiefs is that teams have been covering the run a little bit more because they know that the Chiefs don't have the offensive line to protect to get the ball down the field. If you do that against Pacheco, it is more likely to burn you. And if they ever get the deep passing game going and they let Pacheco run with nobody covering deep again, he's more likely to break off 10, 15, 20, 25 yard runs than Kareem Hunt is right now. Plus, just the idea that they're a good run team. Imagine when they have two guys who are fresh throughout the entire game beating you to death in the third and fourth quarter. I think it's more likely they have the bigger impact. If you get let me choose a Minshew, please.
Yeah, the 1-2 punch, I mean, that is, I think, how they could be really effective with Pacheco. It's not just Pacheco, though. It's having him in addition to Kareem Hunt. Like, I don't think they're going to go back to just 95% of the carries are Isaiah Pacheco. We have to also look at the reality of the injury for Pacheco. I hope he has a exact same burst and everything, but we are talking about,
it's like a bone versus like a ligament. I guess I worry less about a bone.
But for this, not long-term in his career. And by the way, long-term in his career, he may not be here much longer anyway. That's just the reality of running back in the NFL and the position. But is he going to be the exact same player right away? I don't know. So I think it's a combination thing with Pacheco, and he's definitely going to give him a boost. Minshew is just,
he's a really important.
We don't know what he's going to be post injury either. But and his is an ACL. But there was a stretch last year where he was a problem for every single offensive line. In addition to Chris Jones, I mean, he had 6.5 sacks, and he was consistently winning one on ones, which is what they need desperately. That's not something they're getting occasionally from Karlaftis. But that's it. It's Chris Jones and sometimes Karlaftis. Nobody else is really winning one on one right now on the defensive line.
But a defensive line of Chris Jones and Turk Wharton in the middle, and Minshew and Karlaftis on the outside, that can get the job done. And the part that we always forget about this, which is you and I actually had this conversation last year about this defense. It was, what was the unit that was doing the job better? What was the chicken versus the egg? I'll just tell you right now, if you're worried about Nazi Johnson, you're going to worry about him a whole lot less if Charles Amenihu's getting pressure. His job gets infinitely easier with pressure. It just does. It's how it works. You get to stay closer, not jump on the double moves. They don't have time to complete those things. All the stuff that makes your job easier because the pressure is getting to the quarterback faster. I don't think their defensive line is bad. Like, they're the fifth worst in the league in sack percentage. Chris Jones is a monster. Karloftis had like a 3-week run where he was doing those things, but they've never had a third sack guy that has been getting to the quarterback. Never became FAU. Turk Wharton is a good pressure guy, but not a good sack guy. FAU's got one sack.
And Mike
sack,
Dana's been
sacks.
Hurt off and on this
Dana
show.
Hasn't played a majority of the year. The depth of the defensive line is vastly improved just by having a Minihue on the field. But if he is anything like last year's Minihue, which based on his own social media post, he will be, I don't know.
Yeah, he's been taking it personally
to prove us all wrong.
Yeah, he's been taking it personally all offseason and starting this year, too. A lot of people, discussing, hey, can he be the same guy? I think it's a fair question to ask, can he be the same guy? But I definitely love seeing that from a player, obviously, believing that they're going to be just as impactful. And maybe we'll find out. Do you think before Andy's going to speak, as we know here at 11:45, but do you guys think,
I think he plays
one of them is back this weekend?
I think they both are.
I hope
so.
I don't
know why to activate the window and have him practice at least in a limited capacity for the entire week if they weren't going to come back a whole nother week after that.
It's a 21-day window for a reason, or not a 14-day window.
You mean like limited participant?
Yeah, they practiced all last week.
Yeah.
Which makes me think they'll practice again today and Wednesday and Wednesday and Thursday.
The only hesitation I have is they're playing Carolina. And so if they both play,
is it worth it?
If they both play
15-20% of the snaps.
Yeah. A
couple of series.
Exactly. I actually think it's more likely that they hold back Pacheco than a Minihue, personally.
I agree.
Because it's much, I guess you can do it either way, but
defensive line, it's just a more rotational position.
That's right.
It's easy to just play him 30% of the snaps and be like, we play.
Yeah, 100%. Wait, that's what I was getting at is that, like, I think it's easy to play a Minihue and he only plays 10 snaps, or something.
Mm-hmm.
You activate Pacheco, then it goes back to the roster crunch question we've had. There's a decision that would have to be made, if I'm not mistaken. Think about, so
they're
we know
carry for
Kareem Hunt is always active, Carson Steele's been active. P. Ryan's been active. Clyde's been a healthy, healthy scratch given his circumstances. And so what do you do? Somebody's going to the practice squad. Somebody's getting cut. Like, doesn't that have to happen?
Carson Steele, the practice squad, would be my first guess.
You think so?
He's been better in short yards.
I was
going
to say, I think
recently.
It comes down to P. Ryan and Clyde.
P. Ryan? I mean, look, in fairness, now that they have Kareem Hunt, can't Kareem Hunt just do what P. Ryan does? Like, no offense. Like, can't Kareem Hunt just immediately have P. Ryan's role?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that just like the easiest?
They've had P. Ryan back on
now,
the
position.
Most of these are touchbacks anyway, but P. Ryan's been the guy that's actually catching all the kickoffs. I don't know if you guys have been but he's not, they're not returning him, so it doesn't really matter.
Not physically catching it.
I mean, someone can catch the football in the end zone. Can Kareem Hunt do that? Can Clyde Edwards-Helaire do that? If you're going to choose to have him as active.
Clyde's playing another snap on this team.
Well, if that's the case, then I understand it's a tough, tough decision. That he's a great locker room guy. That's what the players love the guy to death. I just wonder, if you just tell me he's not going to play, wouldn't you just cut him? But I just don't know if they will do that.
So we talked about this last week and you weren't here. After listening to his hour-long podcast on the Pivot Podcast, I'm going to view his time in Kansas City completely differently, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What I think about what he was able to accomplish versus all the things he was having to go through at the same time. Like, I'm just going to view him differently, completely differently.
Well, he should be someone people root for, absolutely.
I am rooting for him. But, like, if we are just taking this, sadly, to a purely football conversation, well, then we wouldn't even be kicking this around. It would be Clyde Edwards-Helaire is bumped down to the practice squad or off this roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
If it were, we're factoring in the person to go with it, and the fact that P. Ryan's role is already extremely limited, well, then I would think P. Ryan would go. Carson Steele's the short yardage guy. Kareem Hunt takes over P. Ryan's job, and then Pacheco is the lead back again.
Coming up next, not only will we get to the trash of the day, but one problem that you see the local schools could have moving forward with this new playoff era for...
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
College football. Coming up in 25 minutes, we're going to hear from Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Trash of the Day coming up in about 8 minutes or so. But college football rankings did come out last night. We had a good back and forth in our group chat yesterday
about where
things are at. And we can maybe get into the rankings either later today or tomorrow. But that's not what we're not talking about, the actual rankings that came out last night. But in the playoff era, with the expanded playoffs, we all know all three locals kind of dropped the ball, to say the least, this year to get in the playoff. It sure looks like. You think there's other consequences maybe of this?
I think it almost directly applies to the local schools as a result of they land in this range a lot. So this applies a lot to Kansas, Kansas State, and Missouri as a result of this. I don't think these college football coaches are thinking this thing through. This college football playoff thing hurts them. And the reason why is, for the longest time in college football, you could just lay in the wake of being this 8-9-win football team, go to some all-state Sugar Bowl, live your life.
Hey, Sugar Bowl's a good bowl.
Well,
man.
Whatever bowl, I don't know. guaranteed rate bowl.
There we go.
Pop-Tart bowl.
There we go.
Three edible Pop-Tarts, by the way, in this year's game.
they've upped it to three.
I believe it is three.
They were so good last year. So good.
Nice.
And they've been able to kind of like lay in the shadows, essentially, and just do this. I think more coaches are going to get fired as a result of the college football playoff, because it's going to turn into the NCAA tournament, which is, if you are a Power Four coach who is at a somewhat respectable program, if you just never make the college football playoff in 3 years, well, then get your ass out. I think Eli Drinkwitz is more at risk now as a result of, because this will end up being a, by normal Missouri standards, they're going to win 9 games. 9 games in the SEC gold, that used to be fine. Go to your guaranteed rate bowl and you did it. There's only 4 teams who make the college football playoff. We can't possibly judge you for not being one of those 4. One of the 12? Embarrassing. Bad. How did you miss? Mm. I think it puts more coaches at risk than it ever has.
I think it still depends on the program. I would agree with you at an Alabama post-Kirby Smart era
yeah,
at Georgia.
Really, like, can't miss
those. I think for those schools with you, right, that's in an expanded field, if you're Alabama and if you're DeBoer or whatever, if you're there for 4 years and you don't make it, you know.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely gone.
Then that's 100% with you. I still think out of Missouri, a Kansas, or a Kansas State, especially in the Big 12, where it looks like they're only going to get one this year because of their own fault.
Yeah, single bid league this year.
I don't know if that'll be to that extent what you're saying. Maybe an SEC school like Missouri, I'll buy it more. But like Eli Drinkwitz could go another 2 years without making the playoff. The hot seat would be there, but I don't think it's an automatic, like, oh my gosh, you're losing your job, like at Alabama or Georgia or some of these other schools. And, you know, we had this in our pre-show meeting. Like, there's also, depending on how many years are left of the contract, the buyout kind of stuff.
Expensive,
you know,
buyouts in college football. I do think, Cody, I think your point about Drinkwitz, I think, is actually right, because I had forgotten this until I just looked up the schedule. The SEC, for whatever reason, this year and next year, the schedules are the exact same, except for they just flip home and aways. So Missouri next year, they're non-conference. They do play Kansas, which is going to be fun.
That is fun.
They play Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. That's a tough game as well. But they play at Arkansas, at Auburn. They play Bama and A&M at home, South Carolina at home, but they're on the road against Oklahoma and Vandy. I do think, for your point, Cody,
you got to be one of the top 12 now.
Last year, he saved his job because he was on the hot seat. This year, the expectation was playoff. They aren't going to make it. Say they went out and they win nine games. Good season. But next year, I think he's not on the hot seat, but I do think, because you missed the opportunity with Burden back and all the guys that you brought back, I think his seat is a little bit warmer for sure, because the schedule is similar. I think, you know, to your point, Gold, Kansas State's gone 8-4, 9-3, every now and then a 10-2 season. Basically, their entire existence the last 25 years, it seems like. They've always been really good. But for them to make a playoff, I do wonder, expectations are there, but I think to Gold's point, like for Kansas, Leipold's not getting fired if they don't make the playoff next year. But I do think there is some expectation that eventually they maybe get to that point, because your recruiting is going to get better, the new stadium and all that other stuff with boosters and everything.
I think it's just, I think it's a shorter leash than it used to be. I think a lot of times in college, and this is part of
for the three locals.
This is part of my complaint about college in general, is that It is a sport. It's like watching. This is like why I can't like get it personally. Can't get into European soccer as much. The whole sport is built around this idea that we just had a nice season and that's fine. Like it's like the only sports where they're like the championships don't get mentioned the way they should at Missouri. They're just like 9-win team. We did it, boys. Mission accomplished. And you're like, what? You didn't win anything. You didn't go anywhere. And because college football, they only allowed four teams in, you kind of had to just allow this 9-win thing to be a thing. We won the Garrett, you know, we won the, someone said the Volkswagen Tiguan Bowl, right? We did it. Mission accomplished.
I think for you, the Allstate insurance is more fitting these days.
Because there's only four power conferences, this is why the local teams, because there's only four power conferences, the expectation is once every 3 years, you should have every 4 years, you should have a team good enough to make a college football play. It's 12 teams. We're not asking the world here. We're asking you to get to be one of the 12 best teams every 4 years. That's not asking the world of a college football program. Because they were probably doing that during that
era. I think it still is a, you know, if we're, to me, it's still a select few programs. And what's great about the expanded playoff is everybody feels like they have a shot. And I'm with you. Well, let's just use, I mean, I still think we can use the three locals for this. I mean, maybe Missouri, because it's SEC, is the outlier.
That adds another.
But I still
three,
think
four teams in every
KU
year.
And K-State, they absolutely, like this year, K-State, there was no excuse why. Like
they should have made the college football playoff, Nate.
You know what I mean?
At least the title game.
Or the Big 12 title game to put them in a position. Like, so you're right. I mean, there's no excuse for that. But I don't believe, barring like two or three win type season stuff, that like Kansas State, Chris Klieman could win 9 games in a row for the next 4 years and miss the playoffs. They're not firing him. Like, you know what I mean? Like they could win 9 games for the next 4 years and continue to miss out on the college football playoff. They're not firing him. That would also just be a big mistake if they did.
Cody, do you mean year by year or you mean in the tenure that they
have? In your tenure.
Because I think
you could be at Missouri and be a 6-year tenure, 9-win team in the previous system and still be the coach for the next 5 years like Gary Pinkle, never make the final.
And then that last year you get fired because you haven't done it.
I don't think year five, if you're Drinkwitz and you still have never made a college football playoff under the new system, I think you get canned. I think they just push you out the door.
I don't know. This sounds like Nebraska.
We don't know yet. This is like a hypothetical, obviously.
This sounds like Nebraska and Bo Pelini. They thought he was terrible and they would have for many years.
I think Mac Brown a lot, and then I think of like Texas in both basketball and football for making that mistake. Rick Barnes Mac, and like both of those were examples of like, oh no, you could do so much worse.
Yes,
you could do so much worse.
I do think, because to your point, Alabama is expected to go to the playoff every single year. If they miss one, DeBoer might be gone if they miss it once, in all honesty.
With 12 teams, Alabama should never miss the college football playoff. I'm just dead serious. It's embarrassing.
They'll be calling for his head in a different way, like you're saying, to the point of, I don't know, let's use Missouri and then South Carolina, the team that they just lost to. Shane Beamer does a great job, but if they make the playoff once in the next tenure that he has, he's going to keep his job. If they don't make it, he still might keep his job. Drinkwitz, I think, the most pressure might... I think Klieman is interesting, though, because they're projected to be at the top. If he, say he goes 2 more years and they don't even make the Big 12 title game in either year, I think his seat would get warm.
I disagree. If
they're not making the Big 12 title game, though, Gold.
Yeah.
Forget the playoff, but if they're not they don't even give themselves a chance.
Hold on. We've talked about this on the other end. Do you think it could save someone's job?
Absolutely.
In college basketball, no coaches love saying, made the tournament 3 out of 5 times.
Yeah, no.
Nailed it.
I was going to mention, too, that to that point, but also a step further, which is it's 12 teams. That's obviously more than four. But
way more.
If you make it, it's not so much as saving a job. All of a sudden, then Eli Drinkwitz is getting another job. Like all of a sudden, they're poaching Lance Leipold from Kansas. Like these are the things that also happen. I guess I don't agree as much on the, hey, out of the three locals, you not making the college football playoff is costing you your job. I think it hasn't changed much, you know. Like, and Drew, the Chris Klieman thing, especially with the relationship with Gene Taylor and that specific example, if they won 9 games 3 straight years and didn't make a college football playoff under this new format, he's not getting fired.
If they miss the Big 12, if they miss a shot, though, because I think, you know, it's going to be tough for multiple teams to make it any year, really, within the Big 12. Does it make it more pressing that they're not even making Big 12 title games
Because there's a difference between what like fan sentiment and like the actual high level donors and the athletic director. Like the casual fan, I'm sure the casual K-State fan this year is all upset.
Ready to you know, sure.
Like, sure. You know, that's just
they should be upset.
They should be. Everything was positioned for them to go make it happen. Now they should be excited still because you would think Avery Johnson's only going to get better and he's still so young there in that program. But
Big 12 is one of only four major conferences. There's not even five major conferences anymore. There's only four, and they're only going to put one team in this year. And it might be Colorado.
Yeah.
Unless your squad. Your squad going to upset Colorado this weekend?
I hope so. 2.5-point dogs. I'm thinking about going to the game. Was that KU game last night? Matt Quatrero
doing
was
all
at,
kinds of alumni
he
stuff.
He was at the game last night. I was hoping they were going to show him on the board. He had courtside seats. I think he was next to the new KU baseball coach.
That's runner-up for manager of the year. He can't even get on the board?
I was thinking they were going to give let's give a big welcome to Royals manager Matt Quatrero. No, none of that. They didn't do it.
I usually don't waste a ton of my time on what I deem is loser behavior, at least on this. But for the one guy who left Quatrero off of his manager of the
year. Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
Are you just a joke of a human? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, are you an idiot? Honest to God, some of the voting that we allow for fellow media members, if you are comically bad at it, you should be stripped of it. If you just leave off a coach who took a 56-win team to the playoffs off of your ballot, he didn't even get a last place vote on your ballot. He straight up isn't on it, and instead he had Aaron Boone as the man on his roster. Then you don't get to vote anymore. You've lost your privileges. I'm sorry. It's for the same people. Gold, we've seen this before. We're like, people just put like their hometown guy. They're like, I voted Michael Massey, MVP. You're like, come on, man. I'm sure he's your brother. Or something. Like, you can't do this.
Hey, it's wedding you week. It's Massey wedding week. And
he's
you're
not
taking
an MVP
shots,
candidate this year. That wasn't a shot. I'm saying he wasn't an MVP candidate this year.
Yeah.
Keep him off your roster.
No, I hear you.
By the way, future congrats, I guess.
Yeah,
pre-congrats to Michael Massey.
Absolutely.
Him getting married this wedding?
Fiance are getting married this weekend, as we learned from Vinny Pasquantino yesterday. No, I hear you. I think overall the entire voting process with a lot of this stuff. I mean, we had the coach of the year conversation on the NFL side. When you have, and there's really no other way to really do it, when you have humans voting on this kind of stuff, there is always going to be somebody.
But if you make an egregious decision, you're out.
I think
we can disagree.
You and I disagree during the season. Like, what was the ultimate outcome going to be for both MVP and coach of the year in baseball? And it was trending very obviously, I think, that Vogt was going to win manager of the year and that Judge is going to win MVP. And I think both will end up happening. I think there's a stronger argument for Q being manager of the year than Bobby Witt being MVP. Just heck, Vinny admitted to us 2 weeks ago that he totally gets why Aaron Judge is going to win MVP. It's an offensive award. But to not have Q even on your ballot is absolutely nuts.
It's offensive. I
don't have a problem with Vogt winning. I think it's a little weird because are we just saying, much like MVP and the NFL, that you got to win your division? Is that the new requirement now to be manager of the year? Because otherwise, if we're going win improvement, then Q easily was manager of the year.
Yeah, they just vote on those awards differently. In the NFL, it is definitively most wins for a team who is expecting to have the least wins, which would have been Q, no question. In baseball, they don't factor anything else like, oh, I don't know, payroll. Or wins the previous year, or a million. Because baseball's an even tougher one to crack. Because if you factored in MVP, and you factored in the fact that the other guy who's in top three for the MVP is Juan Soto, if they were hitting directly next to each other, shouldn't that be impacting their ability to perform at the level that they're performing at? Like, we don't factor in anything in baseball. It's just counting stats.
Yeah.
It's always been about counts.
I don't know if it's been an issue with the MVP stuff.
They won more games in the regular season, won the division. Counting stat, we don't care. They care more about numbers than the rest of it.
Greater issue with manager of the year than the what will ultimately be the MVP results with Aaron Judge winning it.
Trash of the day.
All right, this is a new idea that's out there. I think it's a terrible idea, and it's not to say that I'm not a pet lover. I absolutely love dogs. We've talked about this.
You've had a dog for a decade, maybe?
She's 11 now. I mean, the dog is, I don't know what I would do without.
Did you get her as a
puppy? Yeah, got her from a shelter when she was less than a year old. So I love dogs. I say that because this idea on a cruise is terrible. There's a new cruise that is set to sail in Tampa, from Tampa. It's being organized by Cruise Tales, an Orlando travel agent. They're going to have a cruise for humans, but dog friendly and encouraged.
Encouraged.
Guests will need to apply and be approved. There's space for 250 dogs on this cruise. It'll be the first time that pets are allowed on a cruise. If approved, each family will get their own pet butler. Your dog can enjoy grooming and massage areas as well as private
personal pet butler,
as well as private relief station on each room balcony. There will also be dog shows, training sessions, human guest speakers, costume contests, and parades. Dogs will have to follow leads. Rules such as being kept on a leash in public areas, staying out of the dining areas. There will also be dog-free zones, such as the casino, pool decks, entertainment area, and spa. Look, I love dogs, but two things. One, I think it's a terrible idea. I wonder what the smell is going to be on the cruise. And the other part is, if I'm on a cruise, I'll be honest, if I took my dog, I wouldn't be able to enjoy myself as much because I would be worried about my dog destroying something or how's the dog doing.
Yeah, where's the dog going to the bathroom?
Yeah.
I think that might be
the number one question.
Look, I think I love my pets too. You love your pet. But I think there's a difference between like loving your pet and being around there and being like this kind of pet person. We all know this kind of pet person. The one who has gotten permission to take the pet as like an emotional support animal.
Sure,
chihuahua,
you can already do that. Yeah.
On the plane and all the stuff that comes with it. That's for this type of person. I will say, going on a cruise and finding a place to take your dog for 10 days is a massive pain in the ass. So if you're just telling me the dog could come with me, that's maybe the single greatest appeal of it, is that I don't have to find, like Kramer doesn't have to come watch my house so that my dog is taken care of while I'm out of town, right? I can just take the dog with me. Problem solved. I've never taken a pet on any vacation in my life. Have you?
My dog's had to travel with me because when I've moved, like when I moved from Kansas City to Boise, Idaho, obviously the dog went with me. So we were on the road trip she stayed in hotels two nights on the drive out there. When I moved from Boise to Houston, we stopped in Denver. She was obviously staying in a hotel. And by the way, ultimate pain in the ass. Not the driving part. She slept most of the ride, had to stop occasionally, obviously, for bathroom or whatever. The hotel part was where it was a pain because it was a new surrounding. The dogs freaked out, and so the new smells and all that. I hear you on not needing a pet sitter or whatever. But anyway, this is going to be the Margaritaville Sea Islander cruise, November of 2025. I don't see any pricing. If you're getting your own pet butler, you're saying it's a pain to get it. You know how expensive that probably is going to be to bring your pet on the cruise?
Grooming? My pet gets a massage? This is nice. You know what?
You're treating your pet. Oh, as much as yourself.
Yeah.
Very unselfish.
I think to relax on a vacation, not having your pet is how you can do that. I don't think you can relax on vacation the same way. Yeah, I think I'd be stressing. And maybe you're someone that says you'd be stressing out with your dog at home with somebody else. Maybe that's fair. I'm not good
at relaxing on vacation anymore. I vacation with kids. I will never relax on a vacation again until they're in college. Dude, vacation might be more work than my regular life. In regular life, I already have all of the systems in place in order to make this happen. In vacation, you're thrown to the wind. You got none of your staples, none of your like handy tricks and trades. You're just like, you're in a much riskier position. Yeah. It is far more work.
I don't understand what that's like, but I get from you speaking now why parents are like emotional when the kid goes away to college, but also, thank God, we get some time to breathe.
Vacations at my age right now are for my children. They're not for me. They're for them. Oh, yeah. Like, they're definitively for them. Unless I'm getting away for 3 days without them.
You're taking the kids to Disney World, huh?
Ever taken them to Disney? I've never even been to Disney World.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you all were a bunch of millionaires.
No.
Just going to Disney World.
Millionaires.
I'm sorry.
Millionaires.
You know?
No, it's like easily over 10 grand, I feel like, to take
10 grand?
5
to
10 grand.
I
feel like it's
10 grand?
I feel like it's a 5 grand trip at minimum if you're taking your family, at minimum, to Disney World.
If you're staying on the resort, I feel like, yes.
But where are you staying?
So we stayed, when we were younger, we stayed in Orlando.
Right.
Went to each park like 3 different days. But we stayed elsewhere because
I haven't been
it's
since
expensive.
I was in. I went to Disneyland when I was in high school because we had a school trip. The last time I went with my family, I was in like 5th or 6th grade. I have some other family members that took their kids there the last summer or two or whatever, and I believe it was well north of the dollar amount. Like, yeah, I mean, I think it's
my
insane.
My kids want to go to Super Mario World in Super Mario Land.
Cool.
California.
That's cool.
So. And I might have a free place to stay there, which would really
but
knock
the, passes,
the price down.
Like, the passes at Disney, like,
hundreds
before
hundreds
you deal with
and
flights and food.
$1,000 for four people.
Then your kids want to have breakfast with the characters. It's just basic bad breakfast food, and yet you're spending $250 or whatever because it's Mickey's gonna stop by for a photo.
So I think that
if you
want to
get on enough rides, you got to buy the fast pass. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not getting through the lines fast enough.
Oh, I'm getting a bunch of texts now. Here we go.
We didn't fly. We drove everywhere.
So did
for
I.
Vacation.
We did not take flights for vacation.
Correct. Text line says, "Go to Disney World, tight ass. Are you paying?
Tight ass. It's $10,000.
Someone else says, "Vacation with kids." Buddy of mine texted, "Vacation with kids. Parenting in a different location, not a vacation."
Cody, did you enjoy Disney movies? Like yourself,
I like Disney movies.
You would have just as much of a blast as your kids, I think. I don't know if it'd be as much, but you would have a good time.
Maybe one day
it would be fun.
So if
I'm spending $10,000, I've said this before, I'd rather just go to Paris, and then at least I get to go to Paris or something cool. Screw Disney. If I'm spending $10,000, we might as well go overseas together. Do something dope.
Yeah. Look, if our Lake of the Ozarks, Cody Ingold at the lake, is successful this next summer, then maybe we'll have to up our game from there. We'll just have to go somewhere else. We'll just take trips with listeners.
You mean like Six Flags or something like that?
We'll try the Lake of the Ozarks. If all goes well, then we'll just go up a notch. We'll just keep going and seeing where else we can take our show and listeners.
Smart.
Up next, we're going to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, perhaps about the injury status and likely playing time for Amenihu Pacheco.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up next.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
We're expecting to hear from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes in the next couple of minutes. As soon as they are at the podium, we will carry that live here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5, The Fan. Get a little clarification on where things are at with Hollywood Brown, Isaiah Pacheco, Charles Amenihu. Plus, I still think, you know, now that we're already to Wednesday, it's pretty clear they're not bringing in Donovan Smith this week. So, we wait another week to see if that ends up
being
something.
Feels like it's just not going to happen. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday we had Nate Taylor on the show. You guys maybe caught some of that in the 1 o'clock hour, and we asked him about like timeline and where things are at. And also, you know, have they made that call? Here's what Nate Taylor had to say.
I don't think they've made another call. You could always check in, but I don't think the calls have escalated. I know Andy Reid yesterday pointed out that outside of one holding penalty that I don't know if I totally agree with, Wanye was not really an issue against the Buffalo Bills. It was more pressure from the interior. There was a little bit of slippage from the right tackle, but I thought Juwan did fine. I don't think a call has been made. I know the Chiefs obviously signed someone from the practice squad for a receiver. You don't really do that for left tackle purposes. But the question now is the Kingsley Suamataia demotion a one-week demotion, or are we just putting you on ice?
That'll be something pregame Sunday morning against the Panthers when they have their inactives. Is he inactive again? Or is it true that, hey, it was just a one-week reset and now he's back?
Just to let you catch your breath, I'd be honest, you could just not put him in the game. Like, I mean, you could have made two tackles active and made one different. I understand they like the roster flexibility or a million other things, but you just try to give someone a week off. I'll be honest. Does anyone think that would just like solve a problem for somebody mentally? Just taking 1 week off from an NFL schedule. And it goes to the same thing. You and I have talked about this before. There's no real way to gauge this person to person. Because some people, I would say that would make it worse. You're telling me that I'm not even good enough to be on the active roster for the day. And some people would be like, yeah, I just needed a minute. That break was needed, and it helped me get where I needed to be mentally, but I just don't think it's something that we know the answer to. But yeah, I'm curious, because Andy is absolutely going to be asked whether or not this was a one-week thing or if this was a permanent thing that they're planning on getting to where he's just not going to play regularly. Man, someone over on the text line said they spent $35,000 going to Disney World last year, by the way.
They said, their daughter and son-in-law took their five kids to Disney, stayed on property, $35,000. You guys, I mean, that had to have been like the cream of the crop, though, because I hope
you were like,
I have family members.
They were like feeding you grapes and fanning you with those giant leaves.
They had five kids, though. I had a family member, they took them and their three kids, and they spent a good chunk of change. It was nowhere near $35,000. You must have stayed at the best of the best of the best. I mean, it was like, and not only was were you having breakfast with Mickey Mouse and everything, were Mickey Mouse having breakfast, lunch, and dinner and staying in your hotel room with the kids? Like, I mean, that $35,000, holy cow.
Like, Mickey personally escorts you through the park? You got to meet Cyborg Walt Disney? What the hell do you, $35,000? I hope you got every conceivable thing.
Were you flying first class as well?
I don't know, man.
Holy cow.
I don't know. But back to the Chiefs just a little. Sorry, that number was so jarring. It could not be ignored.
All right, let's actually, Cody, we'll pause on that because Andy Reid is at the podium right now.
Everybody will go today for practice as far as the injuries go. Look forward to the challenge of playing the Panthers. They're playing real good football right now and well coached and they've got good players. So, They're playing, like I said, they're coming off two good wins there. So anyways, with that, time's yours.
When it comes to Isaiah, how much do you foresee him playing on Sunday if he is?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see on both those two, Charles and him, kind of go through the practice, see where we're at and this week, and we'll go from there. But, just have to see, day-by-day type of thing.
Did you sense it's easier to reach the guys about the details of urgency after a loss than it might be after you keep finding ways to win? And can you, just in terms of how you can get that across to them?
Yeah, I think the guys have been receptive all the way through. So I wouldn't say that. We got a couple things we got obviously have to fix. So we'll keep working on those.
At some point, Pacheco will be back, and I'm just wondering what the potential for Kareem and Isaiah in the same backfield would be, or just how you could employ both of them.
Yeah, we'll find a way. Both of them are good players, so we'll find a way to get both of them in if and when that takes place. So, that's a good problem to have.
How's Isaiah been through? He seems like one of those guys who wants to just get back and go. You guys had to kind of keep him back a little bit for his own good, maybe. And how excited would he be if he?
He's a spark plug now emotionally. He's something that way, and he's worked his tail off to get to the point that he's at now. And we've got to keep an eye on him that way. He would have played 3 weeks ago, if he had his choice. But that's sometimes how it goes. I appreciate that, though, that mentality. That's what's helped him, like I said, get to this point.
I don't imagine either of those two guys did much in practice last week, but how did they look to you for what they did?
Yeah, both of them took all the scout team reps. So they did a nice job, and I thought I got some productive work.
Do you think stand out to you defensively about the Panthers as you guys get ready for them? I know they struggled winning some games this year, but they must have some good things about it too.
Yeah, so offensively, they obviously have a good running back and a good quarterback. He's playing good football right now. Wide receiver, 17, is a heck of a player. And they've got a very good offensive line. So they're moving the football. The last couple games, and then very well. Defensively, it starts with their front. They've got a good defensive front. Their linebackers fly around. We know one of them from Denver, Jewel. So he knows that defense, and he's the one that's kind of heading things up there. From that standpoint. And then their secondary, they got two good corners and two good safeties. They just got 20 back, so they have a lot of trust in him, and he's a good football player.
Andy, I know we've asked you before about the deep passes to Worthy. I just wonder from your standpoint, before the ball is ever released on those plays, is there anything you're noticing about Patrick's footwork or some of the offensive line, where the pocket is, that is maybe somewhat inconsistent that can lead to those
guys? Listen. There are things, little things here and there. It could be him. It could be not being able to see it, just where he's, where, the way the defense is playing it, whether it's possible pressure, you know, situation there. So it's been a variety of things, but it will happen. You know, it'll click here. And he sure had a nice game, though. He was positive in that last game.
Andy, you mentioned that some of the younger guys was a learning experience for them on Sunday, and obviously on Monday you reiterated that. But after you reviewed film with those young guys, what are the lessons learned, and how much are they willing to get back into it and learn some lessons from the tape?
Yeah, the guys, listen, our attitude is great. Those guys have been, they want to get better. They want to learn. It's always been that way. So since they've been here. And that game, good football team, gives you that experience. So you take and you learn from it and you move on. I mean, I can't go through everything there, but as far as that, but they're receptive to it, and the best part is they'll go try it. So that's the important part.
I'm wondering just the concept of, you know, so the Bills play a little bit more man, have moderate success. Now, how much does that factor into game planning, just considering teams like to copy each other, or is it more so you just focus on what the Panthers are doing and deal with it that way, or is it kind of a combination of all those things?
Probably a combination, but we're trying to focus in on them. That's where it's happening, and they're improving as they go along. They're coming off a bye week, so you know they're going to be fresh and ready to go. And so we've tried to hone in. They've got good coordinators there, and so the schemes are sound, and you've got to make sure you spend the time exhausting yourself on that. And then the techniques and fundamentals of their players, you know, so you're right there.
Where would you say Hollywood Brown is potentially in this opportunity to return this year?
Making very good progress. I can't tell you time when he'll be back, but he's another one that is excited to get back out here and get going. So I appreciate his the way he's approached this whole thing.
Coach, I know a lot, like last week you coached against Sean, you've known him for a long, long time. New coach this week, it's his rookie year. Do you know anything about him? You've better been around him? Or how do you kind of get a feel for what someone's program's all about?
Yeah, I don't really know him, but I know where he's come from. I've had a chance to meet him and talk to him and that at the owner meetings. A sharp guy. I think he's doing a heck of a job down there. You know, looks like the guys believe in what he's saying, so they're playing hard.
Thanks, Coach.
All right, that was Andy Reid here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, you're listening to KFNZ FM AM HD1 HD2 Kansas City. We're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes in just a second. As far as the injury stuff, you caught that at the very beginning. Said when Pacheco comes back, they'll find a way to get both he and Kareem Hunt involved. I'll also say that's a good problem to have. That was something we've alluded to, which is, hey, you kind of have a duo 1-2 punch. Also said it's, quote, wait and see day-by-day thing for Isaiah Pacheco and Charles Omenihu. You did not commit to them actually playing.
Come on, Andy, just say they're playing against
Sunday,
the Panthers.
But we'll see. Probably have to wait till Friday for that. And then lastly there, he was asked about Hollywood Brown. We were earlier in the show discussing his tweet and maybe the practice window opening up. Andy said he's making very good progress. I can't tell you a time when he'll be back. So nothing new necessarily from Andy directly, but also I wouldn't be surprised if we wake up on next Tuesday and the practice window's opened up, or even tomorrow or something, the practice window's opened up.
I think what probably factors in most for Omenihu and Pacheco is what will tell us more than what Andy Reid just said is what their injury report looks like today. Full participant or limited participant?
Let's go back out there and hear from Patrick Mahomes.
But, you know, what did you see that you guys need to improve upon going forward?
Yeah, I mean, there's just, I think, a couple plays here and there kind of changed the momentum of the game. If you look at the throw to Xavier down the sideline, or even the throw in the second, in the third quarter on the second down where I hit Trav, I'd probably hit Noah if I just wait on the progression. Just little plays like that are what make the difference in a big game. And so just stuff that you have to go back, look at, learn from, and try to get better at.
Patrick, what's the difference in mindset just from all these games where you find a way to now, this time you didn't, and you have the sense of, I don't know if it's urgency that you alluded to the other day, but what is it that changes in your mind after that?
I think just having a, like you said, a sense of urgency from the beginning of the games. I feel like offensively we can be better the way we start and the way we play throughout the entire game, because you can tell whenever, a lot of times in the fourth quarter when we need a score, we go right down the field and score. And so if we can play the entire football game like that, it won't put us in these situations where we're in one-score games at the very end.
Do you think it's easier to get everybody's attention when there's a consequence with a loss?
I mean, yeah, we have a lot of veterans, so that they know what we need to do, but obviously a loss kind of heightens everybody's attention to detail. I think that'd be the biggest thing. But at the same time, we know it's a long season. You lose a football game here and there, but you try to learn from that and try to be better the next week.
Patrick, Noah Gray has one of the highest catch percentages in the league, and when you throw it to him, it's almost always a completion. What is it about him that allows for that?
Yeah, he does everything the right way, and he's learned a ton from Trav, and so he knows how to kind of work within the rules of the offense and get himself open, and he's just a guy that's going to be in the right spot. So as a quarterback, you know if you're going to give him the football, he's going to make the play happen, and so he's not going to talk a lot. He's going to come to work, do his job, but at the same time, those are the guys you want on your team, because you know that he's going to do whatever it takes to win.
Pop doesn't seem to be the type of player who eases back into things. What are your expectations for Pacheco when he comes back?
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it. I think it's going to be us trying to hold him back, because he's a guy that wants to be out there as much as possible, and he wants to play. But same time, he wants to win, and he knows the long-term goal that we have. And our goal is to get him back as quickly as possible, but at the best time for him and his body, so that we can have him for the long haul. And so whenever that is, I know he'll be ready, and he'll be that energizer bunny that everybody loves to see.
Obviously developed a relationship with Beach, brings in a receiver, Thornton, to the practice squad. What do you like about his potential?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in season, haven't watched a ton of film on him, but just from the highlights that I have seen, I mean, a ton of big playability. Someone that is a big frame. I didn't realize how tall he was until he got in the building. I'm excited to see him on the practice field working, and I'm sure guys like Carson and them will give him chances downfield, and we'll get to see that speed. And so a lot of talent, a lot of ability, and I think it'll be good to get him worked in within the offense and see what he can do.
When you guys have your script to start a game, and then you said like the first drive, you had the interception, when you get back, now you're down 6-0, you go right back to the script, you have to make adjustments, and does it kind of just mess up the plan you guys had?
Not necessarily. I mean, interceptions are always kind of a bump in the road, because you don't want to have those. But at the same time, I think Coach Reed does a good job of going back to the way we want to go about a game. I mean, obviously with them scoring from the interception, you have to try to find ways to get back in the end zone and keep the game close, keep it tied, or whatever that is. And so I don't think it does much. I mean, I know for me, it's just you keep firing. I mean, you don't want to throw interceptions, but at the end of the day, once they happen, there's nothing you can do about it. You just learn from it and try to be better the next time.
Coach mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think it was the Monday night game, he was only three rushes for Kareem in the first half and kind of got back to it in the third quarter and maybe didn't run as much as you guys maybe would have liked this time around. Mm-hmm. When you're in the middle of the game, I mean, are you thinking about how many times we've run it and passed it and all that kind of stuff when you guys are on the headsets and talking on the pads over there on the sideline? Or just how does that kind of work during the game?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, just obviously we didn't run a ton of plays this last game. With the interception kind of stalling out that drive quickly, and then kind of how the flow of the game was, we probably threw the ball more than we might have wanted to from the beginning of the game. I thought Coach did a good job of getting the run game back going as the game went on, which opened up other things as well. And I think more than anything, just having with the offensive line that we have and those three guys in the middle, getting the running downhill is hard for defenses to account for. And so if we can run the ball downhill, it opens up everything else. And I think Kareem and all those guys do a great job of doing that. So you got to have to play the flow of the game. You talk about it on the sideline, but I mean, all of us have full belief on whatever coach called, we're going to go out there and execute.
What are your early thoughts here on Carolina and the challenge that they present?
Yeah, I mean, first off, great defensive coordinator. I played against him when he was in Denver. Very smart, very intelligent, and he kind of gets his guys in the right position. And they have a lot of talented players. I think you've seen that these last few weeks, is that they play hard, and they're playing better football as the season goes on. And so it'll be a great challenge for us going there to play them. They're coming off two wins and a bye, so they're going to be hungry. And so it'll be a great opportunity for us to go out there and try to find a way to get a win.
Fine.
Just with Xavier, Andy referred to this a little bit, and you have too, just little things on each of the deep connections that are so close to happening. In your mind, what are the commonalities, or what are the things that are just so close that you should be able to get through?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen as the season's gone on that he's playing faster. He has more confidence. It's about me being on the same page as him. And, I mean, I can sit here and we can practice it all we want, but until we start doing it in the game, there's nothing much more that I can really say about it. But I'm excited for it. I believe it's going to start happening. And once it starts happening, the offense is going to really take off.
And do you agree with, is that the right thing, that each play has been just a little bit different?
Yeah, they're all different type of plays. Some of them he's the first read, some of them it's kind of an alert type read. But I think more than anything, when you look at the film, you see him getting open, you see him utilizing his speed, and then now it's about me making the throws where he can score touchdowns, and we score those touchdowns. Like I said, it changes the entire ballgame.
We'll go last three, Nick, Nate, and Steve. Go ahead, Nick.
Patrick, for the guys that haven't been here, the rookies and some of the other young guys that haven't been on these runs, how do you kind of help them as a leader ramp up to this point where the standard is come playoff time?
Yeah, no, this is kind of the point where you have to start taking off. You have to start kind of building. I mean, you want to do it all season long, but it's a long season. And as we kind of get to this back stretch, you want to be playing your best football going into the playoffs. And so as you get close to Thanksgiving and everything like that, you want to start showing progression and stuff that we've worked on throughout the year. And I feel like we're close to doing that, but we want to keep building and keep getting better so we're playing our best football at the end of the season.
Thank you. Patrick, how much do you think that first half for Xavier can be momentum for the rest of the season, given beyond just the deep balls, but obviously inner working and getting mixed into the offense and obviously non-deep ball moments?
Yeah, I think more than anything is you saw the confidence in that he was playing with, which you could tell that he has more confidence within himself and what he can do within the offense. And whenever he's playing confident, not thinking, he's playing fast, and it's hard for people to account for how fast he is. And so I'm excited for him. I thought that was a good jump-off point. We got to keep him more involved in the offense throughout the second half. But at the same time, I think that's going to help the offense go.
Steve?
Patrick, you mentioned offensive line. It's no secret your line able to struggle just a little bit. Do you find it being harder for you to be more patient when you know they've had those struggles?
No, I think that's just on me more than anything. I think even if you look at the first interception, if I really just, even though it wasn't open, if I just sit in the pocket and I run up in the pocket, I don't get kind of slung where I throw the ball over the top of Noah. I hit Noah in stride. It's a big play. And so that's just something that I have to continue to work on, is being able to settle in those spots in the pocket where I can make those throws, not forcing myself to run or scramble too fast. And then whenever I do need to scramble, I got to be smart with the football and make plays. And I thought I had good points of that during the game, but obviously not enough. So I'll continue to work on that throughout the season, and so that we can, like I said, playing our best football at the end of the year.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was Patrick Mahomes right here on 96.5. The Fan was asked about Isaiah Pacheco, and no surprise, we all know the energy level that he would provide. Uh-huh. He described him as an energizer bunny that everyone loves to see, but still unclear if he's going to play on Sunday, Isaiah Pacheco, that is, against the Carolina Panthers.
I'll be honest, there is an incredibly strong argument to what's the point. Like, I mean, look, I'm not trying to just dismiss any NFL team that exists, but if there was one or two, three teams maybe on your schedule in which you could say, what's the point? The Carolina Panthers be on that list. The Carolina Panthers' best football player is Chuba Hubbard. He's had a very good season for a bad football team. That's what the Chiefs do the best.
Well, John, then Brooks also going to play for
them. What is the single best thing the Chiefs do on any part of the field and any facet? Kicking, punting, extra, you know, like special teams, offensive, defensive line, stopping the run. Number one.
Of course.
That is the thing they do better than anyone else in the league. There is no one better in the NFL at stopping the run than Kansas City. So, like, their best player feels neutralized in this matchup. I have to start him in a fantasy game. I'm dreading it. Because I have like seven other backs on bye.
I'd be more worried that Jonathan Brooks is going to start playing, honestly.
Maybe, but either way, it's probably. Now, look, here's the thing. Brooks' problem is he's coming back from injury, and Hubbard's proven himself now.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to be like, well, let's give Brooks some snaps when Hubbard's been this good this season.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, I you can make an argument for not wasting your time with Carolina.
Or if you do bring back Pacheco this weekend, you know, just
10 snaps.
Very limited 15. Stuff. Minshew would be a little more interesting, I actually think, than bringing back Pacheco this weekend.
Yeah, I just like to see him knock the rust off.
And he easily could be active and only play like 7 snaps, 8 snaps.
I guess we don't, like, Felix Anudike Uzama played 12 snaps last week. Can Minshew not just pop by and get 12, 13 snaps?
Remember, short
that
week.
That doesn't feel like...
After this.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like we're risking a ton by getting him in there. 10, 12 snaps, 9, 12 snaps, that seems like a good number. Get him loose, get a little workout in, get a sweat. The only problem is what you're talking about, the short week part, actually puts an even bigger reason on, like, do we want to make them play? Then, for the first time coming back from injury, make them play 5 days later? Because if we've established the trend of they're playing, well, then they're playing. They're playing Friday, too. We can just wait 5 more days. We can just wait 5 more days. Bide our time. Make sure that those guys are fully healthy. The practice report, again, is the thing that will tell me the truth. I will say, Patrick Mahomes, like, we talk about good and bad teammates and all that stuff. He's never going to let somebody else wear it. Like, I think there's a lot of truth in the fact that Xavier Worthy is making more rookie mistakes than Patrick Mahomes keeps screwing this thing up. But he's not going to put it on him because he understands that if he was perfect, Worthy would still be having those conversations, right? And that kind of changes the math a little bit. And so I'll go as far to say, if they are going to win the Super Bowl, they need this Xavier Worthy Mahomes thing to work out. Like, they got to figure out a way where this works sometimes.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I mean, was it yesterday or Monday we were discussing that? I was like, yeah, at some point, if they're going to get to the Super Bowl, they're going to have to hit on one of those during the postseason. It likely involves them hitting on one of us. I'm 100% in agreement with you here on 96.5 The Fan. It's the noon hour. Thanks for hanging out. Jefferson's the official lunch partner of 96.5 The Fan. You can catch every game at Jefferson's, from the blocked field goal to the incredible catches, hopefully from Worthy soon. Witness every moment at a restaurant that's proudly local. Visit Jefferson's in Lenexa or in North Kansas City. Jefferson's wings, burgers, oysters. At some point, too, I think we're going to start having some wings.
I'd like some wings right now. Wings is that on the table?
Too. I don't know, man.
Drew, are they delivering wings today? Because I am interested.
At some point, I think we'll have some wings in the lunch hour. I don't know if it'll be today or a future Wednesday, but that's hopefully something that we'll be doing,
I was going to ask you, which flavor you go with when you go there?
Oh, I think I said honey barbecue, man.
Honey barbecue. I go mango habanero. I like a little bit of the sweet and spice.
The kick. Honey barbecue, or I think it's the Caribbean jerk. Those two, you get a little half and half.
Ooh, you like the crib? Okay.
It's like more of a dry rub on that.
Yeah. I think I prefer a saucier wing to a dry rubbed wing.
During the radio show, I would say, if in this circumstance, if they were brought in, I think you'd have to go with the dry rub, you know? Or
you and I are going to need to find a flavor combo that we would both enjoy.
Yeah. Look, some of us, there's a microphone on a mic stand, right? For those of you who watch the stream, you can see like what the studio looks like. And most of us don't hold on to the microphone. You're not supposed to hold on to the microphone.
Engineering would prefer that you don't.
Some of us at the station do, and so I'm just saying, if you were to eat wings with the honey barbecue sauce, it might be a problem. Might be a problem. Not on this show, but some of us hold the microphone.
I like anytime we say stuff like that, we put something vaguely. they can only eliminate it to three people. They now know that you are accusing either Bob, Dusty, or Carrington.
Well, it's not accusing. It's happening. It's not accusing. It's actually happening.
That's true. Also, if you ever want to see maybe who is holding the microphone, so you know, watch the video stream.
That's right.
YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. Subscribe over at The Fan 965. You want to see the video stream. Then you'll know. I adjust my time to time as like a nervous tick, but only from this little bolt. I touch it from this little bolt. Or if I move it up or down, that's it. You still let that live?
Let's talk about the AFC West.
That's probably smart.
Because I understand the argument, looking at the playoff standings, that, hey, the AFC West could get three playoff teams right now. Well, the NFC North is also going to get three playoff teams if we take a peek at the Lions, the Vikings, and the Packers. Those are the two best divisions in football. I think it's fair to say the NFC West is competitive, but they're all like 5-win teams. It's not the best division just because they're close. It's like the old NFC South argument from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's a bad division.
But I think the NFC North is still better than the AFC West. I get the case. My issue for you that might think it's tougher
the Bears,
not just because they have 4 wins and the Raiders have 2, but like I think we can recognize watching these games that the Bears are a step above slightly than the Raiders. And so at the top of the division, it's the Chiefs and the Lions. Okay, they're very similar in terms of how we view them in the league. I also think like comparing the Vikings to the Chargers is not all that different. I think they're close, but I'd give the edge to the NFC North over the AFC West. But if that makes you feel even better about the Chiefs winning their 9th in a row in this division, then sure.
That's the biggest question of it, is it? Like, now that you know what the division is, doesn't it make what the Chiefs have done so far this season more impressive? I understand one came on a blocked field goal, and people are going to like knock that down as, well, that was a loss. Wasn't, because they won, objectively, so I don't count that as that. But they're also, what, 3-0 against the division already? Have they beaten all three divisional opponents so far with three games remaining? They got the Raiders in 2 weeks, they've got the Chargers the week after that, and then they got the Broncos to finish the season for the final game of the year. So they are already 3-0 against what we think is, at worst, in your opinion, the second best division in football. I happen to think they're the best, but the second worst division. And I'll be honest, the reason why I think they're the best is the quality of quarterback play. I think Patrick Mahomes is much better than Jared Goff. So I think that, like, while the team is good, like, I think Patrick Mahomes is a much better quarterback than Jared
Goff. Jared Goff is playing better football right now than Mahomes.
So, like, even if we're putting them into the wash this season, whatever, if you make me go head-to-head, obviously I'm going to give the edge to Patrick Mahomes. Then it's like, well, Justin Herbert, let's just say we compared him against the next best quarterback in the league. That's Jordan Love. I'll take Justin Herbert over Jordan Love. Now, look, that's close. There's plenty of people. I think Drew last year would have taken Jordan Love. There's plenty of argument on the other side. Jordan Love's been hurt again this year.
Yep.
He also has been throwing a lot of picks.
Yeah, he has
Justin
picks.
Herbert is having a better season this season. His team has a better record. So, you know, like, I'll just give the edge to Justin Herbert. Then if it's down to Sam Darnold, right, or Bo Nix, I guess you give it to Darnold. You know my case. I end up giving it to Bo Nix because rookie hasn't failed versus I've seen Sam Darnold's career and know where it is. But even if that, maybe it's a wash too. Again, the last team is what we come down to. And you're right. The Bears are obviously better than the Raiders by a pretty good margin. But I guess because I think neither of them are a non-factor in what will be a playoff team or end up being a playoff team, that's where I end up making the argument for the West. And Mahomes being in it obviously plays a factor. A
few people on the text line, 913-586-7965, said, I think the AFC North is still the best. They're taking a look, of course, at the top is the Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens, Cincinnati sitting there at 4 wins, Cleveland's at, what is Cleveland at, 2 wins, 3 wins?
They stink.
Well, are we sure that
they're as bad as the Raiders.
Are we sure it's the best, or is it the most, not congested, but like the ugliest division? Like, there's some good teams.
Which one? Sorry.
AFC North. Like, the North. AFC North. Because there's some good teams, but the Browns almost beat the Ravens, correct?
My problem is,
or they did beat the Ravens. Like, that division is just nasty.
The Steelers being your best team does not bode well for my personal ranking system. They're a perfectly fine team. They're winning a lot of games. I take them way more serious after the win against the Ravens. But it's like, you know, like, I don't think that ranks as well as the Chiefs being the number one team in your division or the Bills. And look, the Bills play in the worst division in football. Are they in the worst division?
It's that or the NFC South again.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
NFC West is not great either.
No, they're all 5-win teams.
Yeah, but they're
Cardinals
all like,
are 6-win.
They're all like, they all fight, you know? And I'll give the same thing to the set. Like, they fight. There are a couple of joke teams in the
Jets,
East.
Patriots.
I mean, those teams are bad.
Dolphins have 4 wins right now. I think they end up with 9 or 10 when the season's over, though. I do think the Dolphins are going on a run before the end of this year.
It depends on what you think about Miami.
Yeah.
Do you value Kansas City's start this year 9-1? Differently, knowing that the division is harder than you thought, because we all predict them as 13 and 14 win teams. Mm-hmm. We all thought they were going 5-1 or 6-0 against the division because we didn't think the division was any good. It's actually good.
That was a preseason bet. We talked about AFC West sweep. It was 6-1 preseason for them to sweep. They're halfway there. They obviously got some work to do still against all three of the teams in the division. The Broncos probably, you know, depending on if they need that last game of the season, might end up being it. Yeah. If Carson Wentz is starting week 18, I don't know, you might be rolling the dice. That might be a sweat for some of you that actually made that. But yes, I think the value of the 9-0 start, not just for the number one seed conversation, but this division would be a lot more up in the air and questionable. It's why, I mean, just go back to the 2 weeks ago. Just go back to the blocked field goal. How big was that? This team would be sitting at 8-2 right now and have a loss with the Broncos, and suddenly the Chargers would only be a half game back or a game back. So that, think about, I mean, that we were very close to having this football team be 8-2 right now, and the Chargers sit at 7 wins.
I know, but that's like the balance of the sweat, right? I mean, that's why the Chiefs continue to win the division. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, but that's about, you know, like, for their sake, and the Chargers, like, don't make me go start counting their near losses, because they are aplenty, because they were playing a lot of very close football games there for a while. Like, they almost lost to the Broncos. They almost lost to the Cardinals. Remember how close that game was?
And Cincinnati on Sunday night. I mean,
Cincinnati on Sunday night,
Cincinnati makes a field goal, it doesn't matter, probably.
Like, if we start counting close losses for any team,
how you doing over there, Drew?
It starts becoming kind of a joke, right? Because the Chiefs have probably 5 close losses this year, and so does every other team. The good teams win, the bad teams lose.
So top 4 divisions, we would go AFC West / NFC North. That's 2.
Mm-hmm.
NFC West?
No, I would go AFC North as the third.
Do we go NFC East? Because I think the
problem is the Cowboys and Giants stink so much. You got two teams that are awful.
I think the
even
East,
though the Eagles and Commanders are really good.
I think the East is almost comparable, and the NFC East is in a way comparable to the AFC North because the Bengals are underachieving. Dallas very much underachieving. The Bengals at least are in close games, I guess.
But
so
you
there's
would,
that.
But wouldn't you agree that like it? Yes. The Cowboys at three wins look so much worse than Cincy at
agreed.
Four. Right?
Agreed. I just don't know if, in terms of like if you want this just by record mm-hmm. watching, maybe the NFC West is four. Or is the NFC South four? Because it's weird. I don't trust Atlanta. Atlanta's still leading the division somehow. I thought Atlanta was going to make a run to the NFC title game, I think, before the season started.
Kirk
that doesn't
Cousins
look like it's happening.
It's not been particularly good this year.
And they're paying him how much?
I don't know. A lot. 40,
too much?
$50 million. I don't know. Like I don't remember the exact number, but it's a lot. It's not a small amount they're paying Kirk Cousins, that's for sure. The other part that's happening that is becoming interesting in the NFL is what is taking place in college and how it might impact it. So there's two stories that I think are fascinating. One is Michael Irvin, I think pretty heavily suggesting that if the Dallas Cowboys would take Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders would be willing to be their head coach. Listen to him discuss this on Colin Cowherd's show over on The Herd, talking about, hey, do you think he'd take the job if that's how it went down?
That if Shedeur went to the Cowboys, Deion would accept the job.
I believe 100%, and I can tell you, good sources have told me that. Great sources have told me that. That's all I can say like that without violating anything else.
So he's implying Deion told him, right? That's what we're all taking.
If you look at the Colorado sideline, Warren Sapp might have told him. Terrell Owens might have told him.
Yeah, I mean, so it's either Deion himself or it's somebody very, 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 very close.
I think he's obviously hinting it's Deion Sanders.
That's what I'm picking up as well. I think that's different, though, than somebody saying, oh, Deion would take the Cowboys job. It's a specific that they Cowboys would be have to trade Dak Prescott, trade multiple pieces to move up enough to draft Shedeur Sanders and know that they can pull that off before they hire Deion. There's a lot of things that have to happen. Also, can you imagine Deion and Jerry Jones working together? I mean,
selling your soul for the entire Sanders family, boy, that sounds fun.
I
want to
see
it for personal entertainment.
I wouldn't go there if I'm Deion. You say, why wouldn't you? I wouldn't go because Jerry Jones is going to screw it up again. You're not going to be able to be successful. Everybody wants to blame Mike McCarthy right now in Dallas, and he deserves some of the blame, no doubt. But Jerry Jones consistently is making poor personnel decisions. I mean, I agree with Ross Tucker. It's pretty impressive. They have one of the better quarterbacks in the league. They got a great pass rusher in Micah Parsons, a great wide receiver, one of the best in CeeDee Lamb. You should have a great foundation. But they have screwed up how they've managed the rest of the roster and the timing of giving those contracts out to where they don't have a ton of roster flexibility. And Jerry Jones and his son, Steven, have continued to botch that entire process. So they can go hire Bill Belichick or Deion or whatever. I don't know if it matters, guys.
No, I don't know that that's... But from an entertainment standpoint, hell yes. Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That would be
fun.
But
I also think that that is the thing that would get Deion Sanders to the NFL. The other part is like, Deion has said, I don't know, he said, I got the kickstand down. Like, I'm not going anywhere. He said that same thing at Jackson State. No offense. He's already lost the right to believing that he was never going to leave. He said that at Jackson State. He made it very clear that he wasn't going anywhere. And then he went to Colorado. If the Cowboys called and offered to let him coach his son in the NFL, he would obviously take that
job. It really do.
I do think the difference, though, and again, Jackson State to Colorado, it to me is a bigger difference than Colorado to the NFL, just because Deion said this before on record, is he doesn't like coaching the style. He doesn't want to coach pros. He wants to coach kids, help them develop.
Yeah, I don't know if his style works in the NFL. Yeah.
Yeah, it might not.
I'm sure he would adjust in it, and he actually would be, it would be very entertaining and it'd be fine. But I think that he, like Travis Hunter even has appeared on podcasts before and said, and has been asked a similar question, like, is Deion going to go to the NFL? He goes, I think he's staying here. Like, I think he's here. I think he feels home.
I think you could have questioned it at some point. But, I mean, Deion Sanders took what was, at the time, the worst Power 5 program in college sports And he has them at least with an opportunity to make the college football playoff this year.
In year two.
And he's got three games left. So, I mean, like, or two games left or whatever it is. And so, like, he's done it. The other part
I think he should stay in college. So what you just said, the success he's having. I don't know if his style works in the NFL. We talk about this all the time, whether it was Matt Rhule going to Carolina. And obviously, they're different styles in their own right. But the point is, what you can say to an 18 or 19 year old kid is not the same you can say to the 28 year old that's already made $70 million in his NFL career. He's just not going to listen to
you
the same way.
And you're going to burn out in 3 years. You
know,
right?
Deion's not walking in there to Dallas and saying, I've got my own luggage, you know, and I'm bringing Louie and like doing like
wild.
One, you just already cut like that whole thing is not going to, if you're like a 27 year old, you're going to just kind of almost laugh. Like,
it's
okay,
the Nick Saban fine. Story like, of when like he tried to tell whatever that defensive lineman what to do. He was like, shut your ass up, Nick. Like, dude, I don't care. I'm a full grown adult. The other interesting part is like, because of this, you know how this works. If one thing works, everyone tries to repeat it. So Deion has objectively worked so far. Did you see today that apparently Florida Atlantic is considering hiring Ray Lewis?
I did.
As their next head coach? Or what?
What do they have to lose at this point?
I mean, I don't know.
Right? I mean, it's Florida Atlantic. What do they have to lose? Now, it's not the same path, as you were saying. It's not the same because at least Deion was coaching at Jackson State. Ray Lewis, to my knowledge, is nowhere right now,
this
right?
Is like taking the,
he's just at home?
This is like taking the Jackson State job. I don't know. He's probably just like an analyst or whatever.
Yeah, but Deion coached Shador in high school. Like, has Ray Lewis coached? When's the last time he has any coaching?
Is he coaching anywhere? I don't know, honestly. I know he's not coaching college football right now, but Ray Lewis, coaching anywhere?
Because I think Deion
showed up at a practice or something.
Because I think Deion went from Shador in high school to Jackson State.
Florida Atlantic is 2-8 this year.
So here's the article. Ray Lewis.
Todd Herman just got fired from that job.
From the New York Times, Ray Lewis wants the FAU job, but Charlie Weiss Jr. is the front runner. That's right, baby.
That makes sense. The reason why Tom Herman is no longer there.
Names.
The reason why Tom Herman's no longer there, Cody, is it leaked out that his agent for the last 4 weeks has been searching assistant jobs around the country at bigger schools. So they laid him off pretty quickly.
I'll say this. They've got a really, for a school that you're like, I don't know anything about their football history, their last three coaches are Lane Kiffin, Willie Taggart, and Tom Herman. Not nobodies, man. They're not getting nobodies to coach.
It's like they're picking up the scraps from the people that failed at, like Willie Taggart failed at Oregon. Let's go get him. Tom Herman failed at Texas. Let's go get him.
That was Kansas's hiring philosophy for a number of years, including Charlie Weiss Sr. Where's Charlie Weiss Jr. at these days?
I forget where he's at. He's an OC somewhere.
Do you know where Charlie Weiss Jr. is?
I want to say
he's been at Ole Miss. He's been Lane Kiffin's offensive coordinator.
He's
supposedly really respected, and everybody thinks he is the next up-and-coming young head coach. I understand how it ended
looks
for
like
his
he's
dad.
10 years old.
He was at KU as a quality control guy for a little bit, I think, under his dad. And then he's like supposed to be really good at what he does.
He's only 31.
He might
nepotism,
be
baby.
He might be
hey,
like
look,
the
nepotism
second youngest coach
sometimes.
In college.
Kyle Shanahan's not like it went bad.
Yeah, so nepotism sometimes can we work. Conflate that. Like nepotism doesn't always have to be like this. If you're also doesn't mean he was given opportunities, sure. But if he's really good at what he does, then so be it, right?
Sometimes nepotism still doesn't, it doesn't end in a negative.
Yeah.
I'm just saying he would never be a chance to be a college-level head coach had it not been for nepotism.
He wouldn't have had the,
be at this level at 31 if it weren't for his dad.
At his age, for sure. Now, if you're really good at something, you can get, now did he get to take a shortcut? Absolutely.
That's what
but
I'm talking about.
He also sounds like he's really, really good at what he does now.
Kyle Shanahan ain't got to take a shortcut. Yeah. It's not like I think he's a bad coach. I think he's one of the five best coaches in the NFL. You know, like, I'm not saying sometimes it's negative, but in college football it exists all the time.
Up next, we'll get to the latest names that are popping up that could be linked to the Royals and what they could do closer to the winter meetings, plus the random question of the day right here on Cody and Gold.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.